Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 31, The Burning Plain from 2008. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And with us today, making his triumphant return from the day the Earth stood still, do not ask me how I pulled that reference because I don't know how I remembered it. First time here on Watch the Throne, we have Jeremy Kelly. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. We just got through a bit of a storm here in Pennsylvania, but everything's okay now.
There we go. So now, this was a movie that I had never heard of. Mike, had you heard of this one before we started going or no?
I had never heard of this one, and that so far has been a bad sign.
Yes.
So I was a little worried.
I mean, mostly worried. Just watching movies for this podcast has been a bad sign.
Yeah. But the ones you don't hear about, you don't hear about them for a reason.
What was strange to me, and I have since gotten clarification on it, was that when we were getting signups from people who have been on past podcasts, and Jeremy was on our Keanu Club podcast, was that Jeremy requested to be on this episode for a movie that I had never heard of. And I was like, I wonder why. And then I asked him, and it makes sense knowing who he is, a very big Jennifer Lawrence fan. Jennifer Lawrence in this movie, pre-Winter's Bone,
whoa,
I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
No, really? Yeah. Crazy.
Winter's Bone is, I think, 09. This is 08. Yeah, so this is a pre-Winter's Bone, pre-breakout Jennifer Lawrence. And so Jeremy was like, sign me up, and here we are.
I don't remember when it was, but at that time I was just looking for anything with Jennifer Lawrence, and this was just a movie that came up, and I saw it had Charlize Theron in it. As far as from that time span, pre-Winter's Bone, as you call it, I would definitely prefer the Poker House.
I've never heard of that either.
I didn't know she had this career before Winter's Bone. I was just on the Contenders episode, and I think I was like, yep. Yeah, this is her first movie, blah, blah, blah. I know everything, and now I stand corrected.
What's remarkable about this movie and Jennifer Lawrence in it is that she plays a young Charlize Theron,
yeah,
which like blew my mind.
Yeah, I had to get used to that. By the end of the movie, I think I bought it, but that to me was sort of I don't know if that casting is great. They're both good actors and they both pull off their parts, but I wasn't so sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a mystery to me up until a certain point. Is she the same character?
The movie is told in a non-linear manner,
yes,
pattern, whatever.
Very fractured.
You're trying to figure out what happened, who was involved, why it happened. I think, and this, I like this movie based on Letterboxd. I like this movie less than Mike did. I think this is a well-acted movie that, as an okay story that's told in an overly complicated way for no real reason. I think if you played it straight through, it wouldn't, like, I understand why he told it out of order, but it just feels very convoluted because that's just what this director apparently does. Because he apparently, I was reading, a lot of his movies are told in this sort of way where things are fractured and nonlinear and just out of order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had previously written Amores Perros and Babel.
Oh, makes total sense.
This was the first movie that he ever directed.
Okay. Yeah, that makes, especially, he did Babel, I think I understand him a little better. Yeah.
The movie starts with a trailer on fire, and I was like, who directed this? David Lynch? Because it sounded like
yeah,
Wild at Heart or Twin Peaks. Like, it sounded like that crackling fire,
mm-hmm,
and I was like, oh, it's about this, like, a mother and a father from different families died in this trailer fire.
It's an affair,
and you're like,
yeah.
Who was it?
Yeah.
And I thought, I was like, maybe it's Charlize, and maybe, like, this is the future, and, like, the Charlize in the restaurant is the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kim Basinger comes in the movie. I'm like, oh, so that's not that. And then I accidentally, not really accidentally, but I was looking on Letterboxd, and Letterboxd, much to my chagrin, so if you go to the movie page for The Burning Plain, and you mouse over actors' names, Charlize Theron plays Sylvia / Mariana,
oh,
and Jennifer Lawrence plays Mariana. Mm. And I was like, oh,
that's
a fucking bummer.
That,
like, that's just a spoiler in Letterboxd. And,
yeah,
like, I appreciated that it doesn't save it for the end. You find out about halfway through that Jennifer Lawrence grows up to be Charlize Theron, and things sort of fall into place there. But I was like, that's not cool.
No. Yeah, actually, if you look on Google, if you Google it, they're addressed by different names. So at one point, I actually Googled it. I was like, oh, okay, they're not the same character because they have different names. You know what? Just to address, like, the structure of this, I enjoyed it because I think maybe for the opposite reasons you did, Joey, like, I just feel like it's such a simple story in the sense that there's not a lot really driving the plot. Like, it's just this affair and then sort of, like, how it affects the son of the father and the daughter of the mother involved, and then you pick up like years and years later. For me, what it did was like it really kind of kept me on my toes a little more. I figured this is going to be presented as a kind of a mystery, but there's no real detective. Like, the audience is the detective in this case. I was really sure that Charlize died in the trailer fire. Then I was positive, like, she was at the, when the funeral comes along, I was like, oh, she's the young J-Law. And I was like, no, that can't be. I was like, what is going on in this movie? And then you find out she has a daughter, and it really, like, surprised me. I was like, oh, she's the daughter. That's how the crop dusters connected and all this stuff. So that actually kind of worked for me. The movie really sucked me in from the beginning with, like, the cinematography and the pace. And I do feel like I got a, not necessarily like a heavy Lynch vibe, but I got the sense of a director who had a style, who had, like, a distinct style or something in mind, like, knew how he wanted to present something. For the most part, I enjoyed it because of the, it kept me on my toes. Whereas I think if it was told in a linear style, it would still be interesting, but I don't know. I think it would be a little easier to tell what was going to happen.
I do like the relationships, like, and this is what we've seen in other of his movies, how the selfish, reckless decisions that people make can have repercussions for a lot of different people.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like, I really liked the Kim Basinger character. Like, she's very complex and stuff, and her actions is what caused like all the repercussions in this film, and you find out that they last all the way, you know, into the future, like, you know, beyond what anyone could have been prepared for, really. Where this movie kind of lost me a little bit was more towards the end, when you find out that J-Law murdered her mom and the guy by accident. Like, kind of, it was,
oh, it's 100% by accident.
Yeah, but she did sabotage the trailer and stuff, but it went too far, and I was like, well, I already got the lesson. I didn't know that she needed to be responsible for that. But what I did enjoy was how the son and her were sort of recreating the affair and stuff. Like, that was interesting. That was the most interesting stuff to me for the movie. But I could understand how this feels like it could drag or be just kind of stale at times.
I've always kind of liked movies that have a relationship like this that's kind of sweet but also really kind of fucked up, like it's something like Let the Right One In or something like that.
I was thinking American Beauty at times with the teenage relationship, just in how it's like you said, like it's kind of sweet but it is like demented, you know, like the psychology behind the relationship is very weird and twisted and stuff like that. But it was definitely something I had not like seen before or considered. That angle was interesting to me. The adult stuff with Charlize, she's good, but I wasn't as fond of that stuff as I was of the Jennifer Lawrence stuff.
You know, I was disappointed because I feel like this type of Charlize character is the one that we haven't seen before, really. I like that she's self-destructive. I mean, I guess we're going to get this in a couple movies in young adult, but I like that she's self-destructive. I like that she's, I don't like this in terms of like a person, but I like this in terms of a character. Like, I like that she's suicidal. I like that she's got this like dark, like she's got this baggage. And I wish that we had more time to explore with her as opposed to the past version of her. We're here for Charlize. We're not here for Charlize's character. And I understand that Jennifer Lawrence and what she goes through leads to what Charlize ultimately experiences. But at the same time, I wish that we had more Charlize sort of dealing with the repercussions in reality, as opposed to sort of like, kind of in a way, like working through her demons in the past, and then in reality, kind of just being like, oh, I'm ready to be a mother now. Like, it felt, for our purposes, a little rushed. And I think it works better as a story than what I'm saying here, but I just wish that we had more time with her working through her stuff in the present day to see her, because I think she's doing a really good job here, and we just don't have enough of it for what I was hoping for an above average Charlize Theron.
I almost feel like you could have shown either portion of the movie as its own movie, and you still would have gotten a similar impact, but they don't really blend together in the best way.
Yeah, I definitely sense that it's unbalanced. I was expecting to spend way more time in the present, so to speak, with Charlize, but we actually end up spending more time, I think, in the past throughout the entire movie. I think there's just more story to tell in the past. I think this could work if you told it from the adult Charlize perspective and just flashback like a few times. But I also think you could tell this from, you know, like you could tell the story in the past without any of the future stuff. Like, it's strange how it how you could like rework this. I don't know. I definitely wish there was more Charlize stuff, especially before she before that guy finds her. Like I wanted to see like what else, you know, she got up to, how she spent her time. Like, we didn't really get her hanging out with her girlfriend all that much as I was expecting. Like, I definitely thought they were going to have
Robin Tunney from Prison Break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The chef is the guy, I know him from Northern Exposure, but most people probably know him from Sex and the City. But her first boyfriend who plays the chef in this, I was like, oh, great. Like, he'll be in this movie. Nope. Like, he kind of disappears. So it is a little frustrating, you know, for us, because we're here for Charlize primarily.
Yep.
And most of the movies that she's not in a lot are kind of bad, and like it's hard to watch the rest of them. So at least this time around, I was like, well, I at least like the stuff she's not in. Technically, like, it is her character, so it works. You know, it works a little better. It's keeping me interested because I'm looking at Jennifer Lawrence, but I'm thinking of Charlize as she's grown up.
And I wonder if maybe the Charlize character, like the adult version of this woman, I feel like she's not complex enough as she's written now to really carry a movie. Like, by the time that we see Charlize, she's like a hollowed out shell of a woman. That she's giving her body to anybody who wants it. She's working a job that she's very good at, but she doesn't have any kind of passion in her life. The movie chooses to focus on Jennifer Lawrence because she's not this, like, shell of a person. That she is still feeling things, and that she's not cutting herself. I mean, although, to be fair, she is also broken at that age. Like, she's not cutting herself, but she's burning herself to feel something or not feel something or whatever. But I also, I do wonder if maybe they just didn't have an angle to focus on Charlize as an adult, the character as an adult in when Charlize portrays her, and that's why we spent so much time with, like, in the past.
It seems to me that there's too great a contrast almost between who she was and who she becomes, in a way. Like, they just don't really feel like they're the same character sometimes. And for me, they don't really look all that much. It's something in the eyes that Jennifer Lawrence and Charlize just have very different looking eyes to me. So, like, I couldn't really, that was another thing, you know? I don't know. I wish there was just more parallel between them. Like, you know, in the past, like, there's all this stuff about fire because she burns her mom in the fire and stuff. And then so, like, she burns herself to give herself, like, a scar and stuff.
She's catching fire.
Oh my gosh. We never see the scar on adult Charlize. We see her cutting her thigh with like a rock, and I was like, oh, well, that's interesting, but like that doesn't go anywhere else. I wish there was more like symbolism shared between adult and teenage. Like, I wish she tried burning her hand as an adult. I guess it's that she's by the sea, so she's far, you know, she's at like the opposite, but I almost wish that there was more fire imagery or something to connect the two age differences, because I do feel like we missed a lot. Like, I don't feel like the transformation was complete at the end of the movie. I feel like she went off and then she became the Charlize that we catch up with, and so there's sort of, I feel like there's almost a gap there.
What is notable about this movie, I think, and about Charlize as an adult character, especially the way that the movie kicks off, is that we get Charlize nudity for the first time in a long time. And this is clearly by choice. This is clearly, was she a producer on this or no?
I don't know. I didn't catch that. This is definitely way different than, like, I feel like this is, like, both tasteful and gratuitous, like, at the same time, but it serves the story very well.
I don't know that it's necessarily gratuitous.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing semi-gratuitous is the fact that she stands naked in front of a full-body window where kids can see them as they're walking by.
I don't think
by.
That's gratuitous, though. I think that proves that she is not, maybe self-involved is the wrong word, but she's so in her own head that she's worried about the world. She's not worried about the world around her.
Yeah. I mean,
she doesn't care that these two little boys and their mothers see her.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
she is devoid of emotion and sort of respect for the world, that she is so broken by the grief of killing her mother and of abandoning her daughter at 2 days old that nothing else really matters anymore. And so I don't think that's gratuitous. I think that that's purposeful.
Yeah, that might be the wrong word for it, because it's, as a viewer, it's just kind of shocking for me when she's like standing in front of the window and the little kids walk by. So yeah, and then later on, like, I mean, you're right, like that's almost like one of her techniques. Almost like later when the guy finds her, she just kind of like changes in front of him and, like, you know, shows off her body to him as if like to reel him in, to say like, this is yours if you want. It doesn't work on him or anything. That's probably not the right word, but I don't know what the right word would be. Maybe shocking, I don't know, but take it as you will. It catches me off guard. The nudity in this movie caught me off guard, I guess, especially when she comes out later in front of the guy who finds her. I don't feel like it's disrespectful type of stuff. Like, it's not flashy or anything.
We're way past that point in her career. Like,
right.
This is Charlize, where she has won an Oscar years ago, where she is an established movie star. We are 30 movies into her career. This is Charlize saying, I want to get naked for this part. It's empowering. It's character building. I think the only maybe point where you could say it's excessive in theory is after she's picked up by Carlos, or maybe he works with Carlos, I don't know, the Mexican guy picks her up, and by showing her the most base level of human decency, even though to the audience you see that he's been stalking her for a while, so you think that there's like something sinister at play here, that just by picking her up she changes in front of him and then walks toward him with her breasts out, and that might, you could sort of see that as maybe excessive, but it also, that also highlights how broken she is.
Yeah.
That, like, this guy did almost nothing for her, and she's ready to give her body to him because that's the only way that she can, I guess, maybe feel something, or maybe that she just, or doesn't feel anything ever, and is like, oh, this is what he would want, and I can give it to him because it's not going to impact me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm reading that she actually was an executive producer on this.
Ah, there you go. You know what's funny? Because of the way that the movie was told, I thought that the guy sort of somewhat like stalking her was Santiago, the guy who ended up, she ended up having the kid with. I actually thought that was him. I was like, oh, like, why is he looking for her? And what's this? But then, because we never get a good look at him as an adult, like, you know, he's got sunglasses on and a hat, and then he's in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
So, like, he's not even really in the movie. So, like, that was, to me, like, another twist. When they're in her apartment, I'm like, oh, it's not the kid. Like, this must be someone else or something, like, you know? Because I was just like, the casting, they're not really trying to match cast, I feel, for the future and stuff. So I was like, already, whatever, whoever could play whoever needs to be played as an adult, they're just going for who's the better actor. They're not just, you know, trying to match a look here or anything. So that scene was, like, confusing and revelatory and all kinds of things for me. And it was just another, I guess, example of catching me off guard. Like, the movie did that to me a few times.
What else is there to say about this movie? Because, like, I think it's difficult to maybe go deep on this movie because the story is so simple. That the story is, I think, like we've said, there's an affair. Jennifer Lawrence decides to, I guess she wants to, like, scare her mother, or, like, I don't know exactly what the plan is. Maybe, like, happen by the trailer and be like, oh no, like, there's a fire. Like, mom, I know that you're in there. Like, let's save.
Yeah, I think her only plan was to get them both to run out of the trailer and for her to catch them both. And I guess she didn't really have a plan after that.
Yeah, it seemed, like, excessive to me at that point. Like, I actually thought it was just going to end up being an accident. But, when she goes and unattaches the gas line or whatever, I was like, what is she thinking? And then she lights the trailer on fire. Like, I wasn't sure. Like, you know, I wish we had a little more insight into that moment or behind it, because up until that moment, yeah, you just think that maybe she's going to jump in and surprise them and catch them, or maybe, like, take pictures, or because she's spying on them. And it kind of took an excessive leap there with the fire. But up until that point, I was really with it, because she's just a kid. Like, kids don't always want to go to the authorities and or to an adult, or won't always, you know, she doesn't tell her dad or anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's got all these brothers and sisters. She doesn't talk to them about it. You know, we don't exactly know what she was planning, except that she just wanted to catch them in the act, I guess. And things just got way out of hand. I really liked Kim Basinger in this movie. She really brought it, especially in that scene when she's talking about how she is a cancer survivor, her character is a cancer survivor, and the guy she's having an affair with is just, like, devoted to her and everything. Like, that scene to me was, like, super powerful. Just, like, sort of got to the center for me of, like, what this movie was, like, trying to say. And then after that, it just, I don't know that it could really not hold it together, but, like, it didn't maintain that for me. Like, that was sort of the peak for me. And then it was, like, not downhill fast by any means, like, but yeah, so slowly started losing its momentum for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean, that I really felt the emotional weight during that scene, and everything else, it wasn't bad. I wouldn't call this movie bad, but nothing really wowed me the same way as in that moment.
I feel like there's a certain part where everything has been revealed and they don't really save any twist so much for the end. I don't know. Does the explosion happen like at the very end? Or I mean that, right? Like there's still like 20 minutes left.
It happens toward the end. Maybe three quarters of the way through the movie.
Everything I feel is like pretty much laid out on the table for you. You could piece everything together. I wish they sort of saved maybe something else for like the last like 5 minutes or something. But as it is, I still liked it. I don't know that I'd ever rewatch it or anything. But for what it was, I wasn't expecting it to be as good. Like I really liked the cinematography. Like there's just some shots in this, like the opening shot of like the burning trailer, but also some of the crop dusting shots, and then when she's like standing by the sea, when she's contemplating her jumping and stuff. Like I don't know, there's really just nice framing. And
so Mike, it shouldn't come as a surprise then that the cinematographer of this is basically Paul Thomas Anderson's cinematographer.
No kidding.
He shot There Will Be Blood, Inherent Vice, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love.
Wow.
He also shot Nightcrawler,
ooh,
Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, Hard Eight, Born Legacy. Like this guy shoots action. He shoots really good movies. He shot 8mm. I mean, this guy gets it. He also shot Geely, so maybe he's not always, you know, successful in what he does. But yeah, no, I mean, like that's it. The movie does look really nice.
And one of the composers was Hans Zimmer.
Oh,
yes, mm-hmm. I saw that too. That's pretty powerful behind the camera.
There's very little music in this too, and I like that about it. It just sort of gives it more of like a realism to it, I guess, for some parts. I like that. I don't know. That was just uncommon, I feel like, in a lot of stuff. Like sometimes films just feel like they have to be wall-to-wall score or needle drops or whatever, and I just kind of appreciated this movie not needing to use music to inhibit your emotions that way. Like I really feel like it relied on the acting and the circumstance and all of that, and then it was just let the actors, you know, emote that. And it's kind of a quiet movie. Like there's not a whole lot of dialogue, you know. A lot of it is just expressions, I feel, and like,
yeah,
things,
yeah,
like that. And for a film like that, I think it's okay. Like it does that pretty well.
Do you wish the movie would have shown the end when Sylvia and, you know, Santiago reunite, or is that one of those things that's better left unshown?
Yeah, I liked that. Well, they're in the room together at one point, and she does the whole confession. She actually confesses to him while he's unconscious.
Right.
I like that. And yeah, I felt that was the more powerful ending, you know, the uncertainty maybe, or the last. Yeah, I enjoyed the last image because to me it was more about, and it's not, and the movie wasn't even entirely about this to me, which I feel like it could have been more about, but I feel like at that moment it was more about the daughter forgiving her or accepting her or at least giving her a shot rather than the father, because I feel like by Santiago being like, go find your mom, he was already willing to forgive her or take her back,
yeah,
or whatever. I got a Cagenection in here.
Uh-oh.
A good one too. The guy who plays Jennifer Lawrence and Charlize's dad is Brett Cullen, and he played Nicolas Cage's father in Ghost Rider.
Oh, that guy's been in everything.
Yeah, I thought he looked familiar.
Everything.
He was Barton Blaze in Ghost Rider 1.
So he dies.
Yeah, he dies on that
trick.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking, I know I've seen him somewhere. He looks kind of like Robert Patrick, but he's not Robert Patrick. Now that you say it, it instantly clicked.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else. Like, I feel like I might already be out of notes about this movie. Like, I like this movie. I have it right now 15th out of 30.
Mm-hmm.
For Charlize, which isn't great, but it's still better than a lot of her terrible movies.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ranked the last couple movies. I've just been in like a daze about it. Just like, I got to think a little longer on these and just let them sit with me more and then figure it out later. I'll figure it out at the end, I think.
I guess the one other thing I want to talk about is when she's sitting by the bed of her comatose baby daddy, for lack of a better word, she has a little bit of like an Oscar moment where she's like, you're not going to die, are you? Because if you die, I wouldn't know what to do with her. I can barely look her in the eyes. She needs you. I need you. I'm so scared. And I was like, that's a good moment, but I feel like it's, I don't know if it's earned.
Yeah, I liked that confession. Yeah, you're right. I like the moment. I'm not sure either. And I think it's because of what we were saying sort of earlier, is that future Charlize or present Charlize, there just isn't more of it. Like, I don't feel like we're with her long enough. I understand her in the future, but I want to be with her more, I guess. I don't know. There seems to also be, for me, a shift where one minute she doesn't want anything to do with her daughter, and then the next minute she has to go find her daughter, and it's like, I feel like we're missing a little bit of motivation there, too. But you're right, Joey. I think it might have something to do with the fact that I am, at least, more connected to the younger version of the character of this movie than the older version.
Yeah, I didn't totally buy it when she said, "I need you," because he's been such a little part of her life since all that happened. I did buy, you know, her trying to reconnect with her daughter in that way, but that extra bit just seemed a little bit tacked on to me.
I didn't mind it. I just feel like there's, like, that's the moment that the movie's building to. But we just don't know that it's building to that until it's very late in the movie. Like, we don't know that she was pregnant. We don't know that she gave up a baby. I guess you can maybe kind of infer some of it, but the movie doesn't come out and tell you what's going on, what the actual moment of, like, emotion is going to be or supposed to be until maybe the last half hour, which I guess is, on one hand, okay, but it feels like a reversal in a movie that, like, and not a reversal in, like, a, oh, here's a twist. It's like a, oh, here's a different story that we want to tell. And it just sort of feels not sloppy, but just questionably misdirected. Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't feel to me like a traditional, like, American type of movie. The way information is sort of revealed, like, I feel like there's okay, so, like, here's what I guess I'm getting at. I feel like there's points in the movie where it's like, okay, if you haven't figured it out yet, here's what's going on. And then, like, a little while longer, it's like, okay, if you haven't figured that out yet, we're going to drop some more hints about it. Because you can sort of figure out that girl's her daughter, and then it's actually before the younger version sleeps with that boy. So it's like, okay, you know she's gonna get pregnant in that timeline. This is getting kind of hard to explain too, going back and forth. I mean, it's easier to just watch it, I guess. But, like, maybe it just shows without telling a little too much. Maybe that's the problem. Like, show don't tell is what you want to do, but you don't want to overdo it. And I think there's points in this movie that might overdo it without telling you what's going on at times. Like, I think it really, I don't know, like, I think it gives the audience the benefit of the doubt, though, but maybe a little too much, because I had moments where I was like, yeah, who's this guy? What's the relations here? I was disoriented from time to time, and I don't think it was intentional. I think it was supposed to be, I hope, you know, you're still following me along.
Right.
So at times, yeah, it's not perfect with what it does. It gets a little mixed up, but I think for the most part it sustains itself. Like, it only really crumbles in, like, the third act, and even then it's not like a house of cards crumbling, like, quickly. I feel like it's just, like, slowly little bricks are sort of falling off the top of it.
It almost feels like a proto version of the movie the guy wants to make, but, like, if he had written other movies before this, it feels like he should have been able to execute it better. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a good version of this out there. It just isn't necessarily this movie.
Maybe if a seasoned director had done it, you know, maybe if this wasn't his first movie. It's very finding out this was his first movie makes, like, first directed feature is understandable now. It's a lot to take on for a first feature. Like, this, it's not like it makes sense that the story is sort of simplistic, but that the structure is so complex. For a first time director, I probably would have expected it to be told linear, or, you know, less fractured.
You almost wonder if Alejandro Iñárritu had been the director, that it would have been a little bit more polished.
Probably. I think that's a good call. Absolutely. I do want to point out that I was looking up to see if this movie was nominated for any awards. It was nominated for small awards, but I just found out that there is apparently an award show called the AARP Movies for Grown-Ups Awards, which is a thing. And Kim Basinger won Best Supporting Actress in this movie, beating out Imelda Staunton from Taking Woodstock, Marcia Gay Harden for Whippet, Judi Dench for Nine, and Susan Sarandon for The Lovely Bones. But these categories are crazy. There's, like, there's Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Comedy, Best Director, fine. But then there's, like, Best Grown-Up Love Story, Best Movie for Grown-Ups, which Invictus won that year. What? Like, why?
So, like, you can't nominate, like, a Marvel film for that, because is it considered not adult?
These are basically all, for lack of a better word, they're all boring movies.
I hear that. That's weird. I mean, especially since, like, I have the MTV Movie Awards on in the background, and they're known for, like, the most obtuse categories ever. Like, they started with, like, out the gate, they're like, best kiss, best fight, best on-screen chemistry. It's like, where? Like, these are great, but where did you come from? And now we have the adult awards show that isn't, like, Triple X adult stuff. Like, I've heard of, like, the porn adult awards, but, like, the adult movie awards that aren't pornos, like, that's just confusing.
That's why they call the category movies for grown-ups and not movies for adults.
Yes.
I'm still confused. I'm still confused.
Jeremy, we have a game that we play in here. Before we get to the game, is there anything else you want to say about this movie?
It is well acted. Yeah, like you said, the cinematography. I think it's written well. I just think the way the story is told could have been cleaned up a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And Mike, any other last thoughts about The Burning Plain?
I think I may have liked it more because of the other stuff we've watched during Throne.
Right.
You know, ever since I rated it, I dropped it half a star. I have it at 3 now on Letterboxd, and I think it's going to stick around there. I think it's right around there for me as like a, you know, if I'm going to just rate it as a movie and not part of this program or anything either. It kind of loses itself like towards the end. Like it almost just like becomes less interesting, I guess, once everything is sort of laid out on the table. But I really enjoyed the first act and the second act. I liked it. Like I wasn't expecting to like it this much. I would recommend it. I don't think this is something I'm going to watch over and over again, but I think it's got some really strong performances. I think if you're a Jennifer Lawrence fan, you're going to want to see this movie. If all you really know her from is like Katniss or, you know, Mystique and stuff, like I implore you, check out this, check out Winter's Bone, you know, Red Sparrow, like other stuff that she's not doing young adult stuff and things. Like I feel like she's a very powerful actor. Her playing young Charlize, even though visually I didn't buy it, I bought it like emotionally and stuff. Like I think she's strong enough to hang in the likes of Charlize, like because Charlize is such a great actor too, and she's doing some really interesting stuff here. I think for what it is, it's pretty good. I was pleasantly surprised today watching it.
Well, there we go. So we have an email address here on the show, watch@cageclub.me. If you want to email us your thoughts about the show, about the movies, about Charlize, whatever you want to read, or whatever you want to send, we will read on air. No emails today, but send us an email, watch@cageclub.me. We are now recording these closer to the release date, so you won't have to wait weeks and weeks to hear your thoughts on air.
Can I say something really quick before we move on? Because this will come out, we've just released a new Cage Club episode, 211, yes. Right? So 211 will be out by now. After having watched that movie, I'm not saying I owe Stuart Townsend an apology.
Oh, right.
I'm just saying. I might have been a little too rough on him in the past. It could get so much worse. I just wasn't aware. You know, my perception has been expanded. I feel like Doctor Strange was like, come over here a second. Let me show you how bad it can get. But yeah, so I just want to say before we move on, I would have written in, you know, maybe I was a little too hard on Stuart in the past. I still love
you
him.
Think?
But, you know.
While you're apologizing, do you want to apologize for any other movies that you might have trashed on the show, that specifically one in particular?
Oh, that come on. That tour's ended. I've already come around on...
Reunion tour, baby. Do it again. Bring it back.
No, well, maybe at the very, very end. Well, I have to rewatch it first, but Waking Up in Reno, I'm going to rewatch you. You know how I feel out there.
It's wonderful. Okay, email us, watch@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of Stuart Townsend. Let us know what you think of 211 by Nicolas Cage. Terrible, terrible movie. Do not watch it. But anyway, we have a game here. Jeremy, we've had a few different games. The one that we are currently playing is that this movie is going to, or this episode comes out next Friday as we're recording this.
Okay.
So the big release in theaters is going to be Sicario 2, Soledad. What we're going to try to do, there's a little flexibility here. How would you can either go first if you have an idea, or if you want to wait and think about it, you can let me and Mike go first. How would you take the Charlize character from this movie and put her in the world of Sicario, or, flexibility in this movie, take the Jennifer Lawrence character, because it's a young Charlize, and put her in the Sicario world? Or, if neither of those really feel right to you, how would you take Charlize Theron as an actress and put her in the Sicario world? I don't know much about Sicario 2 Soledad. I know that Emily Blunt is not in it, in which case I feel like there is a very big opportunity for a strong female presence in this film. With those rules, and Jeremy, there's no right or wrong answers, do you have an idea, or do you want to sort of wait a second and let me and Mike sort of stumble through our own ideas for this, and then you want to go afterwards? So you want to go first, or you want to go like later?
I already have, I mean, there's already a built-in idea, the fact that the Jennifer Lawrence character, they go to Mexico.
True.
Oh.
So how would you sort of work her character, just like flesh it out just a tiny bit more? I really like that idea. How would the Jennifer Lawrence character go into Mexico, maybe to give birth to the baby? How would she interact with, say, Benicio del Toro or Josh Brolin or whatever? Like, in what way does that all weave together?
I think I'm going to let you guys go first with that one.
I got one idea.
Okay.
And I love that they got Benicio del Toro back. He is It's amazing how he can be like either hilarious in one movie or just as scary as possible in the other movie. Okay, so I'm going to go with, I don't know much about the sequel. I love the original. But what I'm going to kind of make up what I think the sequel's about.
Sure.
For a second. Brolin hires Benicio del Toro to do something, you know, like take someone out. And the job goes south, so Benicio del Toro kidnaps Josh Brolin's sister, played by Charlize Theron.
Okay.
And is like totally unprepared for the fact that she's like an ex-Navy SEAL, and they have like kick-ass like shootouts and a car chase, and so she's escaping Benicio del Toro to get back to Josh Brolin while he's coming to rescue her. And then when he gets there, it's like she is like in the middle of killing Benicio del Toro, and he's like, I came to help, and she's like, I don't need your help. And just like, that's the end of the movie.
I like it. I just have an idea. So Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario, who I don't know if he's involved in Sicario 2, also wrote and I believe directed Wind River.
Yeah, great movie.
And in Wind River, there is a very, very tense scene outside of a trailer. And I don't want to go too much further into that, but there is a very tense scene in the snowy wilderness and they're around a trailer. So in my mind, Charlize Theron, maybe the trailer doesn't blow up, or maybe there's some kind of alternate reality where the trailer, maybe it's before, and Charlize Theron goes back to the trailer to sort of, you know, remember the days of yore. In Sicario 2, obviously, similar to Wind River, similar to the crossing the border scene of the first Sicario, Benicio and Josh Brolin, all these armed guys are moving in on the trailer because they think that there's something else in there. And then it's just Charlize, and shit breaks bad in a hurry, and I don't know how she gets out of it, but she gets out of it. I just see that trailer as like this Taylor Sheridan-esque landscape, set piece, whatever. Charlize returns there. Maybe she's trying to find the piece together, the fragments of her youth, and she goes back there, and then just guys with very heavy, you know, machine guns start creeping in on the trailer.
I like the imagery there. Joey, you know what's crazy? We went this whole episode and we were talking about Charlize Theron and trailers, and I didn't once mention that Kramer movie where
Trial and Error.
If we were still playing the game where we were connecting the universe.
Oh, absolutely.
This would be the trailer that she pulls over the side of the road and decides to live in that exact spot where she gets a flat tire, and then like later down the line it would blow up and catch fire.
Yep. So Jeremy, do you have any other, because I really do like your idea a lot, do you have any other way to sort of flesh that out a little bit, that she goes to Mexico to maybe, you know, have the baby, any way to sort of work that into the plot a little bit more? If not, it's totally okay, but any way to sort of expand upon that?
Yeah, here's an idea I have. Either before or after, I'm not sure, during that time period where she has the baby, she needs money, so for one reason or another has to do a job for either Benicio or Josh. Years later, she's trying to get her life together, and she gets a call from them, and she needs to do like one last job.
One more ride. I like
that.
Very cool. So the last segment on the show that we have is the Watch the Throne Awards, maybe called the Golden Wallpapers, maybe the Golden Teeth, maybe the Golden Corns on the Cob. We never talked about that yet, Mike.
I say it every once in a while. I scream it out there. I say Golden Corn.
So I don't know if this is necessarily as good enough to nominate for Best Film. Definitely not Worst Film. Definitely not Best of the Worst or Wildly Inconsistent Tone. I want to jump to the end. One thing I want to for sure nominate is Jennifer Lawrence as Best Non-Charlize Actress / Role.
Actually, it's the same role. So, just Best Non-Charlize Actor.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a first.
That's
it's the same role, but she's also, yeah, she's
very
definitely.
Very true.
Yeah, I wish almost, I actually like that Kim Basinger isn't in more of this, because it just, whatever she's doing just rings stronger for me. But if she was in longer than this, if she was in this longer, I would nominate her, maybe, because I just never saw her as like a serious dramatic actor. Like, I mean, she did LA Confidential, she's great in that, she's great in Batman, she's great in everything. Like, she has her style, but like I never just seen her reach like this before, and I was just like, wow. Yeah, J-Law is awesome. Like, you can just tell from so early on that she's got it, especially when you watch a movie like this and then see like a talk show interview, you're like, oh yeah, she is acting her ass off in these movies.
Yeah, and again, I would like to recommend Poker House, which is from the same year. It's directed by Lori Petty.
Oh, no way. Connection.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, and it stars Selma Blair and a very young Chloe Moretz.
Whoa. Oh, okay.
How did this movie escape our knowledge? I have no idea.
Do we want to nominate anything in this for worst love story, which I feel is maybe a little bit strong? It's not that bad.
It's if we had a most tragic, because the thing is it's not that it's poor, it's so weird. It's so hard to really say. I don't want to say it's healthy, you know? It's definitely not healthy, but yeah, I don't know.
Most fucked up love story?
Because there's two of them in this, and they're all just crazy.
What I do want to nominate is for best non-Charlize death, Kim Basinger. What's his name?
I never got his name, but I know him from Desperado. He's the kingpin, the Mexican drug lord in Desperado.
Whoa, hold on. There's a guy.
Bucho.
There's a guy.
Is he also
in
the Keanu movie with the wine?
Well, hold on. So he's Bucho in Desperado.
Yeah.
Who is he, though? The question is, who is he?
Oh,
in Fast Five.
Yeah, yes. He's in Fast Five. He's the guy that, isn't that the guy that she puts her hand, they need the handprint? So he puts his hand on Gal Gadot's butt. To get the fingerprints.
Never send a man to do a woman's job.
That's crazy.
Hernan Reyes. He's also in Che, so there's a little bit of a Soderbergh connection there. So yeah, so I'm gonna say Kim Basinger and what's this guy's name? Joaquin de Alameda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Butchering that. Die in a fiery explosion.
Embraced. They had to cut him apart. Yeesh.
Exploding trailer.
Just such a weird way to go.
You want to nominate this for best cinematography, Mike?
Yeah, if we have that category still.
We do.
Okay, for now.
For now.
How
for
deep
now.
Is that? You don't have to
three.
Read them
all. It's okay, this, okay. Cider House, and Bagger Vance.
Wow, I can't believe those two movies got nominated.
I feel like we're going to cut this movie. Cut the category.
I feel like that was a joke. I feel like that was a joke category just to nominate those two for something.
Is there anything else, Jeremy, that you think is of particular note of that's either really, really good or really, really bad about this movie that we should recognize at the end of the run? I look through the categories we have now. I think we're pretty much good. But is there anything either of you think is noteworthy enough to nominate here at the end?
Not much other than what you already have. I mean, there's not really a whole lot else to say about this movie.
I will agree with that. I think we're pretty much exhausted it.
There's just one more thing. I mean, it's the most trivial thing. The director has the exact same birthday as my mom, date and year.
Oh wow. Oh, that's
interesting.
Cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this movie has a special place in your heart for two different reasons.
or at least just Guillermo Arriaga.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, Jeremy, thank you for being on this episode. You'll be back in a few weeks, probably about 6 weeks or so. 7 weeks. No, 6 weeks. Nope. 5 weeks.
Whoa.
For Snow White and the Huntsman. You will be back for that. So
cool.
a little case stew action over there. So thank you for being here. We look forward to having you back shortly.
All right. I'll be looking forward to being back.
It's going
to
be a bit of a different type of movie, I think.
Little bit.
Just a little bit.
For all things Watch the Throne and all of our other shows, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter or Instagram. Email us, watch@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the show. Of Charlize's movies. Did you see Gringo or Tully? I did not see either this year because we're going to watch them both in about 2 months. And I was like, why am I, in my very busy media life, going to watch these movies twice when I'm going to talk about it in a few months? Do I feel bad about that? Absolutely. Am I going to watch it a second time? Probably not. We will see. But Gringo and Tully coming up soon on the show. So email us, watch@cageclub.me, cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, @cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Jeremy Kelly. And we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.